thank you for having me and your words. Hearing that I'm living my life passion actually brought tears to my eyes, because I am, but it's something to hear it from somebody else. And so with the gratitude that I'm feeling, I thank you all for being here and for being open up to having a discussion around dying and death, which, you know, for some, it's a little bit difficult. For me, it's become something that I can't stop talking about. And I'm just going to call up my screen, get rid of myself. So can everybody tell me if we see the first page? Community Deaf Care. All right. All right. Perfect. So Community Deaf Care in Saskatchewan, the reason I speak about community is because that is what deaf care is about. It's when community comes together. We've known through COVID, et cetera, that there's a lot of isolation going around. The same can be said for dying and death. There was a time our ancestors and our families took care of our dying at home, but we've really distanced ourselves in the last, gosh, since the Civil War, since during the Civil War, many soldiers who wanted to come home after they died, their family wanted their bodies to come home. What happened is the doctors started embalming them, which is wonderful, right? Then their bodies were able to come home and they were able to see their sons for the last time. But with that, what happened as well is we started to disconnect of taking care of our own dying and death at home. And with that came a little bit of taboo. We're not living, some are, but we're not living with many generations in our own home where we see dying happening. And thank goodness to medical advancements, technology, et cetera, vaccinations, people are living longer and there's not babies that are dying as quickly as well and those kind of things. So we've, again, we're a little bit distanced. And if you think about death in our society, I do want you to start paying attention to what we read about or how we see it in movies. And so oftentimes in movies, it will be either horrific, traumatic, a little gory, or you usually have the opposite, which is cue the music and somebody expresses the most beautiful sentiment in their last dying days, which wraps everything up. And the truth lies somewhere in between. The reality lies somewhere in between. And because of the way it's presented to us, sometimes families are expecting that final moment and that clarity to come and that forgiveness and everything to be wrapped up and dying. It's just, it's not entirely the way things work. Just switch here to my page. So when I explained that the history of dying, if you think back, like I think back to my grandmother's house, there was a room that was a special room and it was for guests and we couldn't sit on the couch. We could sit on the carpeted floor and the lampshades had plastic on them. I want you to think of those rooms. And way back when they were called parlors. And that's when after the Civil War, many families started up their own funeral businesses, which is where the word funeral parlor comes from, right? We've never really connected the dots to that. And once the funeral parlors began, we no longer called that special room in our home a parlor. What did we call it? What is it called today? It's called the living room, correct? So, and I like sharing this history because it just reminds us that we used to take care of our dying and we used to be more comfortable around it. Some are, some aren't, but there was a history not that long ago that we had it at home. So what's community death care? It's a movement of people gathering and sharing in education and advocacy to reclaim what innately our bodies know of how to be in dying. Some cultures do a little bit better than others, and some don't. It's our way of honoring death and honoring the wishes of those around us. Who is community death care? All of us right now, speaking about death and dying. That's what it is. Within the death care movement, though, there are people who are called Thana doulas, or death doulas, or end-of-life doulas, and I call myself an end-of-life doula. And where does the word Thana doula come from? It comes from thanatology, and thanatology is the study of death, dying, and grief, bereavement. You might hear the word home funeral guides or end-of-life companions, or death educators. Doula comes from the Greek word, which means servant. It means slave. And I had a gentleman once speak to me and say, why do you call it, it's kind of offensive. It means slave. And I sat with his truth and his honesty, and I was grateful that he shared that with me, because then I was able to reflect back and think, and I am a servant to this, and I don't mean it in a slave-like way, but I do appreciate being of service, and that's the way I sit with the word. For those who are end-of-life doulas, we're not here to replace anything that already exists in our society. We have wonderful hospice palliative care nurses. We have chaplains. We have spiritual leaders. What we are is we're here the continuity and the complementary role that families can bring us in and on. And I don't want to talk too much about my role, but I do want to talk about how we as human beings can live our lives more fully, actually, when we actually sit with the fact and the truth that we are all dying. And I put this visual up because I like for people to reflect. And really, I mean, I don't know if people want to, but in the chat, if you just want, like, what do you see here? You see a celebration. You see gifts that somebody thought about. You see forks and spoons. Clearly somebody thought about what we're going to eat. Somebody thought about what we're going to drink. I'm just going to see what we hear. Joy. Excellent, Tanya. And the reason I bring this up is because if you think about your life, we plan absolutely everything, or we try, right? We try to plan for baptisms. We try to plan even our pregnancy sometimes. We plan graduations. We plan birthday parties. We plan a sleepover with tents and masks, right? But we plan things. And when it comes to dying and death, for some reason, although we know it's there, we know it's inevitable, but we kind of put it on the back shelf. And it truly is a disservice to our families, because when we get to the time of dying and death, there's so much grief and chaos and emotions that trying to figure things out at the end becomes really difficult for family members. So my hope and wish is that after today, we all start thinking a little bit more, and also start thinking a little bit more about our own dying in a creative way as well. Start thinking about music you want. Start thinking about how you want to be honored. Start thinking about, we often hear, in lieu of flowers, please donate too. If you can already think about where you would like people to maybe leave some legacy or leave money, etc., what are those special moments that are important to you? And it's great to start thinking about it, but then the next step is, who do you tell so that they know as well? Another thing about conversations as well is, I had a gentleman once after a death cafe approach me, and he said, but whenever I try to talk to my daughters about it, they start crying. And he says, they're very emotional and it's uncomfortable. And my question to him was, are these conversations you've had all through your life with your daughters? And he had a moment, he said no. And so, of course, if we don't have these open conversations with our children, with our families, they tend to be heavier because we're not comfortable. So that first image I showed you with the D word, death and dying, we don't even say somebody's died, we say they've lost, or just think about the words and the euphemisms we have around death and dying. Again, it distances us from it. And so thinking back to that gentleman is, yes, of course it was uncomfortable, because it's the first time he started to have these conversations with his daughters about his own mortality and his own dying. And the reason I bring this up too is because quite often I'll hear people say, you'll say, what would you like for your funeral and memorial? And they're like, I don't care. I'll be dead. I won't worry about that. It doesn't matter to me. And perhaps it doesn't matter to you, but to those who are left behind, it's quite difficult to try to figure out what they might have wanted and wanted to honor them, but also to alleviate any kind of conflict between siblings and families of, well, mom would have wanted this or dad would have wanted this. But if it's written down somewhere, then you avoid a lot of that. And it allows for your family to be gifted the time of showing up with the emotions they're feeling versus working through all the details. But how do you get prepared? So if you walk into a restaurant and you want to order something, unless you're presented a menu, you can't, right? And the same applies for our own dying. Again, because we don't speak of it or always plan for it, we don't really know what's out there and what choices we have. When I spoke just a moment ago about I don't want a funeral, my question always is, and I hope for any of you who might confront this or have somebody who says to you, I don't want a funeral. I will say that marking the transition is huge for those who are left behind for grief. Having a moment in whatever capacity is huge because it allows people to grieve and it allows them to sit with the truth that there has been a transition in the marking. But when I hear I don't want a funeral, the biggest question you could ask is why? Why don't you want a funeral? And A, you might hear, because it costs too much. B, you might hear, well, because some stranger is going to talk at my funeral that didn't even know me. Or three, I don't want the fuss. But when we can speak about what it does for those that are left behind, it really makes a difference. My answer to those that say it costs too much, through planning and resources, you can have direct cremation and you can plan things and your family can do a lot on their own and it can cost less than $3,000. So that's good to know. It's also law that families can take care of much of what they wish. You have the legal right as long as nobody's paid for it. So yes, you can't embalm somebody. Yes, you can't cremate somebody. Yes, you can't bury somebody. But you can do quite a lot outside of that, and you can find those laws on the funeral FCSCS, Funeral and Cremation Services Council of Saskatchewan. At the end of this PowerPoint, I have a lot of resources listed, and I will send this off to Tanya or someone if you want to pass it on to everybody. So how do you get prepared? Yes, your will and estate. But more than that, we mentioned in the beginning that April 16th was Advanced Care Planning Day. So I'll list a few things, but in Saskatchewan, you can have My Voice and you can read through this and put it on. It's also available online. But there's also another one called Speak Up through Canadian Hospice Palliative Care Association. And you can do that online, save it, come back to it, and you have it for 6 weeks. Because the truth is, once you start digging in and diving into some of what your wishes are, you can't do it in 5 minutes. It takes a little while. What are your funeral wishes? What are your cremation options? So when I say cremation options, people might say, well, cremated, that's my options. A lot of people don't realize that in Saskatchewan, we have the ability to have cremation by fire or cremation by water, or what's called alkaline hydrolysis. And I have a slide coming up about that as well. What are my burial options? Many who want to be ecologically and conscious, they will choose a green burial. And then rituals that can be done. I'm sorry, I jumped quickly here. Let's see if I can go back. So getting prepared is some of that, but getting prepared is also, I'd like everybody to think for a moment. Think about your basements, if you have a basement, and think about your garage. There's probably a lot in there that needs to be purged. And if you were to die and your children or those who love you come in to clean it out, how do they know what is worth keeping and what isn't? And suddenly, what you thought you were going to throw out next week suddenly becomes really important to somebody else. So that's another way you can start preparing, is purging what's not needed. And if you have what's in your house and you know that you want to leave it behind, there's ways to write a name down or write it in your will. The reason I have this image up is because it was my grandmother's apron and her rolling pin, and I love to cook. by fluke it landed and it came to me, but it really meant a lot to me. Didn't mean a lot to others. But if you can start thinking about those personal objects that belong, that you would wish to leave behind, it's good. Another thing I'll say too is in a situation where you might have been diagnosed with an illness, it can seem overwhelming and it also can leave you with a sense of lack of control. By having discussions and putting things in place, it gives you back a sense of control. A life review is where you get to start reflecting about all the momentous moments in your life that you want to leave behind as well. So for me, what I've started doing is, this is called The Book of Me. And in it, it has stories like, what was your birth like? What trade, vocational training, or higher education did you do? How much did you worry about the future when you were a kid? But I'm trying to fill this out once a week just so that my children have some stories behind as well, right? We don't often think about it, but our stories are so valuable. And I just need a time check of how long I can go just so that I know to keep on track. Legacy work is a part of that and life review as well. So just start thinking about stories. And it's oftentimes when I'm working with families and I might be in a room or a hospital and I will ask the couple, how did you meet? Can you tell me about your dating? And sometimes the children have heard it, but the adult children, sometimes they haven't, right? How was your pregnancy? How did you get married? And those stories are quite valuable. I see a chat here. 5 minutes. Thanks, Truma. So I mentioned, how do you start having the conversations? CHPCA, this, Speak Up, you can go online and it asks you for some of your wishes. So you can start investigating and put it through. I will say that this document has come in so handy. Recently, I worked with a family where mom was dying of cancer and we prepared her paperwork last fall. And you can never do it soon enough. I've done my voice directives and healthcare directs as well. And I will say in the beginning, some family members were a little bit like, who is this lady and why are we doing this paperwork? But afterwards, after mom died, it was really helpful for the family to have mom's wishes in there and nobody had to second guess what they wanted. I was quite touched because I received a text from an adult child who was at first kind of resistant to the whole process. And he said, I can't express enough how calming it was for us as a family to know that everything was already decided. So through this paperwork, you think about what's right for you. You can also learn about medical procedures. You choose who will make the decisions for you. Why this is important is, for instance, I have two people listed for my substitute decision maker for healthcare because yes, my husband, but I also want my best friend because my husband might be in a situation where he's really emotional and I want to give him the chance to be emotional while my other friend can actually make sure that everything I've decided is done. I would ask that you start looking at your My Voice as well, which is the next one, because especially in a time of COVID right now, I've had a talk with my husband and I said, if I were to be intubated and we didn't have a lot of ventilation, and I'm asthmatic, I don't know. Like I kind of feel like maybe I might want the ventilators for somebody who's younger. And so those are tough discussions, but they're good to have so that he has an understanding of where I'm at in my life. Speaking of COVID, I want to share this as well, is if you can start having the conversations with children before COVID and in case we were going to be hospitalized. I knew that at 3 a.m. is when we get really difficult. And at 3 a.m., you can't call somebody or Skype somebody in your family. And so I had asked my family, we all wrote letters to each other. And I haven't read them, and I hope I don't have to read them now. But they're letters of hope to cheer the person on who might be in the hospital, but also what our favorite memories are and why we love each other. And my children who are 11 and 14 did this. And I can tell you that I know if I were in the hospital at 3 a.m., it would give me some peace to have something tangible in my hands that I could read of theirs. Okay, so I was saying in Saskatchewan, what are your options? You can have cremation by fire or water. You can have a burial, which is traditional, or a green burial. Alkaline hydrolysis is where water and lye is going through a huge machine, and that might sound a little bit disconcerting because it might be the first time some of you hear about that. But there was a time where fire cremation was illegal, and it was also not accepted in many churches, right? And so things evolve, especially in our world where there's not a lot of room for interment. And I'll just say that the two places you can get alkaline hydrolysis in Saskatchewan is Gray's Funeral Home and Swift Current. So Prince Albert and Swift Current. And for also those who might feel something, please know that all of our animals and our vets who have ever cremated animals use this process as well. Green burial means there's no embalming and that you are in a biodegradable shroud or casket in the ground. And in Saskatchewan, we have one green burial, which is Prairie Sky Cemetery. Other than that, many of the rural areas are still as green as can be, if that was important to you. For time's sake, I think I will stop here, but if anybody wanted to know, for my father-in-law, we held a ceremony where it wasn't in a church, but what we did is we did a mock trap shoot to honor him. We had his cremated remains put in the clay shells, pigeons, and we went out on the field and we did the trap shoot to honor him in that way. After his cremation, all that we did involved in community, and we held his ceremony at the gun club. It cost us $500. He had prepaid for his cremation, the rest we did, and it was absolutely beautiful, and it cost us $500. And I share this because I want people to know that there is a way to be creative and do it in your own way. It brought our family together. We all had a role to play it, and it was beautiful. On this slide here is a video that you can take home and watch later. But in New Zealand, they started up a coffin club where they built their own caskets. And so you can watch that yourself. And then I just ask, being present to your own dying can be your last great gift to those you love.